You know, there are all kinds of interesting people who live right around your neighborhood, like, oh, the publicist, the rights distribution manager.
Would you look at that? It's people in your neighborhood on 95BFM.
Oh, hi there.
Shh, listen. Welcome, Gabe.
Kia ora. Thank you for having me.
How are you today?
I'm doing very, very well. Yeah, yay. I'm glad to be back.
Thanks to this inaugural interview for These Are the People in Your Neighbourhood.
Yeah, absolute pleasure.
So you are a member services representative from APRA AMCOS.
Yes.
And you're going to tell us all about it today.
Yes.
Are you able to tell us what APRA AMCOS is and what they do?
Yes. So APRA AMCOS, call ourselves a music rights management organisation. We represent over 100,000 Australasian songwriters, composers and music publishers. And essentially what we do is we license organisations and businesses like BFM to play, perform, copy or record our members' music, and then we collect and distribute the royalties to our songwriter members.
Wow, that's so full on. So what's the difference between a songwriter, a composer, and a publisher?
Cool. So when we talk about songwriters and composers, really there's no difference for us. It's just kind of referring to the individual musician, I suppose. Publishers are music publishers. So locally, or at least independently, there's Native Tongue, Songbroker, and there are a bunch of others as well. And they represent, they're a rights holder as well. So they represent songwriters on their own behalf, and they try to, I mean, a whole segment on music publishers would probably take up quite a bit of time, as you would know, Penny. But they represent their songwriters' interest in trying to exploit their catalogue, exploit their songs as much as possible. But they're also members of APRA because, like I said, they're rights holders. They own copyright, so we collect for them as well.
Right. And can you tell us what the different rights are that APRA represent?
Yeah, sure. So APRA stands for the Australasian Performing Rights Association. So that's with regards to the performing right. So the performing right that's exercised is exercised when a song is performed in public. The examples being when a song is played live at a gig, if it's broadcast on radio or on TV, streamed on digital services like Spotify, played in a shop or restaurant, hairdresser, fitness centre, viewed on YouTube, and a lot more.
Wow,
and
that's a massive list.
Yes, yeah. So that the performing right is kind of the one that gets exercised and triggered the most when you're out and about and experiencing music, I guess, as a consumer or someone that's in a shop or whatever it might be. The other is the mechanical right. So that's AMCOS, and that's exercised when a song is copied in any form for commercial purposes. Examples being basically when a record label prints CDs, vinyl, cassettes, whatever it might be. Also includes when sheet music is printed. A really common one for our members when they get AMCOS royalties is if a school has printed a lot of their music via sheet music, because schools use music and require a license as well.
Yeah.
So that's their music being reproduced. And also if an existing song is synchronized into moving image like film or TV. Yeah. So there's a sync fee there, obviously, which is a whole other thing.
Yeah.
But then the mechanical right is also being exercised there.
Oh, wow. So it's quite full on.
Yes.
So, and for the performance rights, like I know bands when they play at Whammy and stuff like that, they've got to send in set lists.
Yes.
So can you explain why it's so important to do that?
Yeah, sure. So live music venues like Whammy, Wine Cellar, Neck of the Woods or anything else up and down the country, Blue Smoke and Christchurch, whatever it might be, they pay for a license, an annual license to be able to use music in their venue. But also they pay, an aspect of that license is for live music as well. And an extra portion of that license goes specifically to a live performance pool. And what we ask is for our members to tell us throughout the year, basically every gig that they've played, and for them to tell us the venue that they played at and the set list that they played. And when they tell us that, they're called performance reports. We basically take all of the money in the live performance pool and then distribute it based on all the information that our members tell us. So they provide set lists that not only include original songs of their own, but also any covers that they might have as well that they might perform. A lot of people don't really know that they can perform live and get paid and then also get paid for playing their own music.
Yeah.
That's kind of a bonus for them, I suppose.
Yeah.
But it is part of the kind of legislation, the Copyright Act, that, you know, when their music is being performed, that they're eligible for royalties, and that's how that kind of works.
Yeah, and so that's why it's like so important for any artist to be registered with EPRA.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the performance reports is for gigs that are happening at, like I said, local music venues, but for larger gigs as well, where the ticket price might be where it's $35 or above, or at major festivals like Laneway or anything like that, those individual events take out an event license directly with us, and we use a percentage of their ticket sales to then pay them based on their royalties. Mm-hmm. So artists, any artist that's making original music, creating their own music and performing them live, can essentially be earning royalties from APRA. And, you know, if they're not a member, then they certainly should be.
And if they're going to be getting like income streams from lots of different places. Can you kind of explain how, say, like getting money from or royalties from radio broadcasts works, or television and things like that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So BFM, for example, takes out a license with APRA AMCOS, and that allows the radio station to be able to play whatever music they want. And the same goes basically for any business. So Spotify takes out a license, Apple Music takes out a license, TVNZ, TV3, any kind of organization that's taking out that's using music is required to take out a license through us. And basically they're also required in some part to report their music use. So a digital service provider like Spotify, Apple Music or Google Play, obviously they have, you know, they have enormous resources, so they're able to send us every single thing that they play in a quarter.
Yep.
And then we use that data based on their license fee to distribute royalties to whoever's songs are used. So for TV3 and stuff like that and other commercial radio stations, they also provide 100% of the data that they play. For radio stations like BFM and Iwi Radio, we use sample data. So we kind of sample a certain period of the year and try to use that to pay.
I think that's how BFM works, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. And then we also we distribute royalties in a whole bunch of different ways depending on where the revenue's coming from, and can be kind of complicated it seems complicated, but it is relatively straightforward. But we use kind of other data as well, particularly digital service providers' data like Spotify, because it's quite accurate.
Yeah.
And so many people in New Zealand are using that to consume music. We do use some of that to kind of supplement some of the gaps that we have, if there is any gaps with data.
So EPRA would have seen such a massive rise in the use of like things like Spotify as opposed to other streaming formats formats of just generally playing music.
Yeah, digital revenue is kind of continually on the rise year on year. I think our year in review is due out pretty shortly, and that's going to show another increase in digital revenue, and also kind of revenue from video on demand like Netflix and Stan and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, cool. And so you've talked about going into a pool. Can you explain how it kind of gets paid out? Like how that kind of works as well? Because I think, you know, like the thing is like you want to know how it's collected, but also like when is that money going to arrive in my bank?
Yeah, that's right. So it is kind of, in terms of how we pay, it's pretty multifaceted and relies on a few things. So first of all, like I said, we rely on data to come from our licensees. They provide us with data. But in order for kind of APRA members to get paid, really what they need to do is register individual songs. So the data that we receive is kind of based on individual songs. So BFM will send us, you know, 10 weeks worth of data, and it'll have the individual songs that they played. And then that's how we pay on them. So if you're an APRA member, in order for you to receive royalties, you do need to register each of your works through your APRA member portal, which is a super straightforward thing to do. And we distribute 4 times a year. So there's 4 quarterly distributions for domestic royalties. So that includes Australia and New Zealand. If you're earning royalties from outside Australia and New Zealand, we pay monthly. Mm-hmm. So another thing is that when you're an APRA member, we represent your rights worldwide. So if your music's getting played in the UK, then the equivalent of APRA is collecting on your behalf for us, and we pay those every month.
Yeah.
So our members that are doing particularly well overseas will be getting checks every month.
Yeah.
The members that are kind of relying more on domestic stuff will be getting it 4 times a year. And then when it comes to the performance reports that we were talking about before, they get paid the same time every year in the November distribution. So that's coming up pretty soon. So a lot of people would have spent a whole bunch of time sitting at their computer prior to the deadline on July 31st.
What song did I play?
Where was that gig again? Spent a lot of time doing that prior to July 31, which was the deadline, and they're waiting for payday in mid-November, hopefully.
What happens if you didn't get it in by then? Can you do it for the following year?
Yes, you can. Yeah. So if you're already a member, you can make retrospective performance report claims. If you've just become a member and you're thinking you can claim back the last three gigs, you can, last 3 years gigs, you can't.
Yeah.
If you remember 3 years ago, then you can claim back. So I think for the next year, you'll be able to go back to 2016. And you might have to provide some evidence by way of like Facebook events or flyers or anything like that. So yeah. If you have missed out and it's super common, you can definitely get into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, when it's open again.
And another thing that I kind of like only recently kind of thought about is when you register a song, you might you might have more than one person that wrote that song.
Yeah, yep.
So when you register with APRA, you let them know of what the percentage splits are that you actually kind of work out, I guess, either prior to going into the studio together or if you're having a beer in a garage, then you kind of go, ah, we're going to register this.
Yeah.
We're going to, you know, play this on BFM and we want it to be, you know, split three ways evenly, right. That sort of thing. So you take account of that and pay out accordingly as well, right?
Yeah. So that's a really, really important part. And like when you're signing up to APRA, you sign up as individual songwriters. So you don't sign up as a band. So if you're a four-piece band and you all contribute it equally, then you all should become members of APRA. And yeah, we will pay the songwriters based on whoever registers the song. So if you and I write a song and I jump on to register it, however I decide to register those splits, 50-50 or maybe a different way, that's how it'll get distributed. So any royalties collected on that song, 50% will go to me and then 50% will go to you.
Yeah.
And it's really important to try, as kind of dry as that conversation can be with your bandmates, it's important to try and have it prior to registering the song. Just because once you've registered a song with multiple songwriters, if you want to change that, you need approval from each of the songwriters because they're rights holders, essentially. They're copyright owners. And it does happen, and we can definitely make amendments. As you would know, kind of sending through the odd thing for kind of Echo O's or whatever it might be, we can easily make those amendments, especially when the band are talking. But sometimes there are bandmates that are no longer talking to each other.
Have you had some terrible instances of that?
There are definitely some songs still sitting in dispute because people don't want to talk to each other. But, you know, that's by the by.
And I can confirm that happens worldwide.
Yeah. Like, it definitely does.
What about, say, someone who has a lot of samples in their music?
Yeah, so when it comes to, if you're using samples, I mean, essentially when it comes to, if you're wanting to register that song with APRA and earn royalties, you do need to have cleared that sample. And generally what will happen is you will need to give a percentage split to the original rights holders of that sample. So if you, as you would know, seeing the kind of back end of APRA's system, some of the song registrations that we have for like a Kanye West track have about 16 songwriters, you know, five or six of which might be individual songwriters from like a 10-second sample. So it can get super complicated depending on the samples that you're wanting to use, but you do need to have them cleared if you, you know, if you want to release the music commercially, and you should be doing that anyway. Same goes for remixes. So if you're remixing a track, you can register a remix provided you've got approval and permission from the original songwriters and you've all agreed on how you're going to split it. Sometimes there's kind of remix for hire, I suppose. So an artist will pay a couple of remix artists an upfront fee, but they'll retain the rights in the remix. Other times they'll all be included in the registration.
Yeah. So I guess like for people like wanting to sample a remix or do anything like that, they just have to think about the fact that it is someone's intellectual property.
Yeah.
So you've got to check, like, you know, what needs to be done with those rights, because you wouldn't want your intellectual property taken, and just because it's out on the internet, you can't just go, woohoo, this is mad.
Yeah, exactly right.
Let me have a party with
it. Yeah. I guess, you know, when it comes to that, APRA AMCOS has to be pretty staunch, you know, like we rely on the Copyright Act being quite stringent so that we can collect for our members, and we expect our members to kind of have that same sort of respect for other people's intellectual property. If you're using someone else's creative work, you need to credit them, and it needs to be, and you need to get permission for it, as you said, because if it happened to you, you'd absolutely want that to happen. I have had people kind of contact me and say they had something available for free download via a service, and then they saw it on a US musician's YouTube page.
Yeah.
What happens there? And it's like, you shouldn't have put your thing really up for free and then expected anything.
Yeah.
You kind of have to be clued up about it a little bit. And if you know, if you're not sure on who owns the sample but you know the song, get in touch with us and we can tell you, because we've got an enormous database of songs.
Yeah, I can definitely vouch for that. Like, anytime you have a question and you're not quite sure, just give EPRA a ring and they'll help you out, and they don't mind doing that at all. As well as kind of looking after those as well, what else does EPRA do? Because you don't just do look after copyrights. There's some other things that
no,
you do.
No, that's right. Yeah. Well, I guess on when it comes to the licensing side, we have a joint venture with Recorded Music New Zealand called One Music. Mm-hmm. So they're the organisation that licenses businesses like cafes, live music venues. It's all through One Music. So that's the kind of licensing arm, I suppose, of APRA and also Recorded Music New Zealand. From the membership and APRA side of things, we also put on, we have the Silver Scroll Awards, which happened last Wednesday night, which
so much fun.
Yeah, which Aldous Harding won, and it was like, to have a top five like that is so heartening for us, because it shows just how strong New Zealand music has been over the past kind of 12 to 18 months.
It kind of is pretty amazing. Like, I just wanted all five to win. I wanted it to be just like a tie because it was just like, how do you choose, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I know it's the cool thing about Silver Scrolls is that the artists have voted for by other songwriters. So
that's
it's
right,
songwriters voting for other songwriters, which I think is really important, because you're being like kind of judged by your peers, you know, as opposed to just kind of like industry people.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think, I don't know, I just really appreciate that.
Yeah, you know? I think it's a really a good process, you know, like, you know, if you're also, for those that are members, if you're getting that email about voting for the top 20 and top five, definitely open it up and have your say, because it can be really, really, really important. And if you love a song, you know, you need to let us know.
We have to reinforce that voting for anything is always good.
Yeah, that's right. So, there's the Silver Scrolls, which happened last Wednesday, which is a really big part of our year. We also have Song Hubs every March, which is like a songwriting camp that we put on in Eden Terrace, where we kind of have APRA members apply, depending on kind of their level of where they're at in their career, which can be really, really important. And we've had a bunch of songwriters do extremely well out of it. Chelsea Jade, for example, is one that's really kind of headed over to LA. And
can you explain a little bit how a songwriting camp works? Like, because a lot of people wouldn't know, like, how you put the people together and, you know, like...
I guess it is a bit of a... Certainly, it's a bit of a kind of pop. It's sort of what happens in the pop world, and I guess R&B and hip hop as well. But basically, from what we do with Song Hubs is we bring over four international songwriters, and we have about 15 to 20 participating APRA members. And basically, four people get put into a room and you're expected to kind of write a song in a day. And it's just a demo. Like, it doesn't have to be, you know, commercially recorded, like, you know, super high standard. And that happens for 4 days, essentially. So there might be, I think this year we had six studios going each day. So yeah, there were six songs coming out at the end of each day. And this year's one's been really, really great. You know, maybe not the sort of music that would get played on BFM.
Yeah.
but...
hey, but if you don't have pop, you don't have alternative.
That's right.
Yeah, totally.
So that's how it works. And it can be pretty, like, high pressure, depending on, and pretty intimidating for someone that's never done it. But it's... If someone's planning on kind of doing that sort of thing, maybe heading to the UK or Europe or the US and going into those sort of environments, it can be a really good preparation for them to know what they're stepping into.
Because it is kind of like putting your foot in the door and learning to work collaboratively with other people.
Yeah.
And I guess, like, you know, if you're an artist and you're, you know, you could be churning out your own songs, but there might be something, you might be like a punk rock person, but you like have punk pop sensibilities, but you think, oh, I really want to write this country song with this person. And so you could co-write a song with somebody else, and, you know, we talked about those splits earlier. If that song is successful and you didn't want to release it under your artist name, but it goes to another artist that performs it, then you get royalties off that.
Yes.
So that's why it's really good to be able to be part of the Song Hubs, learn to collaboratively write.
Yeah.
And, yeah, get your foot in the door to write, like, going to work in places like Nashville and LA where they have like little kind of rooms all set up all over the place where people do that every day, right?
Yeah, they do. And, like, you know, one of the writers who came over, Maze, she talked about, talked about the process a little bit, and you might go into a room with like go in for a session and not think much of what you've written, and it will kind of, it does the rounds of kind of producers and publishers and different artists, and you never know what's going to happen to it. So it can be a really, really good opportunity. And, you know, certainly from this year and previous years, a lot of our members have gained really useful connections that have meant that, you know, they can continue doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, like we want to support them as much as possible. So the Song Hubs program is really, really cool. And hopefully we're going to be doing a little bit more of that in kind of the coming years, that we'll see a little bit more access to maybe up and coming artists and also kind of more experienced members as well.
Yeah.
And then the other things that we do, we put on seminars pretty regularly in our office and up and down the country, and partner with other industry organizations like Recorded Music New Zealand and the Music Managers Forum to put on some seminars around Aotearoa. So that's pretty much everywhere, and hopefully, you know, we do them kind of year round. And we also have the Professional Development Awards, and they happen every 2 years. So we've just awarded them, and I'm going to forget everyone, but Delaney Davidson was successful, Jamie McDell and Brooke Singer from French for Rabbits, those yep. three kind of won in the contemporary music category. So that can be really, you know, like a massive support and boost for those guys.
And what are they, I mean, they're obviously artists, but what are they awarded on? Their kind of professional development overseas, like how they're going in their career?
So the PDA, the Professional Development Awards, you have to put in an application and you have to kind of prove that the money that we're going to put towards you is going towards something specific.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't necessarily have to be internationally driven. Can be local. Can talk. You know, it could be kind of anything. But really, the application is where you're going to, you know, win or lose doesn't seem like the right thing to say. But I guess that's really what's happening.
Benefit or not benefit.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
the one.
yeah.
Yeah. So that's they happen every couple of years, and we've got a list of all the winners on our website. There have been some great, great participants. Grayson Gilmore, Chelsea Jade again. And yeah, I mean, we're just so proud of how well those guys are doing, of course.
Yeah. And can you tell us a little bit about what you specifically do at APRA?
And, as a member services rep?
Yeah. And I guess like how you got there. I mean, you were once at BFM.
Yes.
On the radio.
Yeah. Yeah. I was reading the news on Thursday mornings with George and Sarah and Anna. So yeah, I started doing the news and then got my own graveyard shift thanks to you for a little while. So really, like, being at BFM was a super important introduction for me into New Zealand music, because people can probably already tell from my accent that I'm not from here. The text lines were like, just like, who the fuck is this guy? So I'm originally from Melbourne, but yeah, BFM was crucial in like me understanding and getting to know heaps of New Zealand music. And that was really my way into APRA as well, because Hugh Sunday, who used to run things around here, was a bit of a reference for me over there. So that's how I got started, but I've just been a massive music fan and a musician myself. But in terms of what I do day to day, as a member services rep, so in the member services department, there's myself, Rita Luck, and Trilby Crowther, mm-hmm. and the director is Victoria Kelly. So myself, Rita, and Trilby are there all as reps and just kind of fielding queries each day. So phone calls, emails, and anything that might come up, you know. I deal with the new applications as well, so I process all of them twice a week. So I have people getting in touch, fixing those kind of queries and stuff like song splits, you know, yeah. fixing those sort of things up and answering questions about royalty statements and what they mean, and if people have heard their music somewhere but something hasn't come through or they're expecting something, we kind of take a little bit of a closer look into that as well and try to proactively do things as much as possible. And just any kind of queries that people have when it comes to their music, when it comes to writing music, trying to get in touch with other organizations, trying to kind of link people up as well. We have kind of going back to the Song Hubs thing and the international aspect, we have a member rep in LA and also in Nashville and in the UK.
Yeah.
And the guy in the UK, Adam, also services kind of Germany and Europe. So sometimes we're liaising with them to make sure that any member that's going over has kind of a someone to talk to, I guess, if they need to as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, like a lot of members come to us for kind of extra guidance and trying to link them up with other organizations, or just trying to get their head around copyright, because it's not a simple thing to get your head around, unfortunately.
Yeah. Even I'm like, because my day-to-day job is to do with copyrights, and I'm just like, sometimes I'm like, whoa, brain explode.
Yeah, complete yep. brain explosion. It can be really, really difficult.
Okay, so thank you for coming in. we've been talking to Gabe Andrews from Member Services, representative from APRA. If people want to join up to APRA or get in touch with you and ask you questions about royalties and copyrights and things like that, what's the best way of getting in touch?
So they can either give us a call or send us an email. You can contact us on 0800 692772, or you can email through to nz@apra.co.nz. And we look at that each day and we field those phone calls. Any questions that you might have about applying, about kind of maybe some reticence about applying, or if you got stuck on an application, you can always give us a call or whatever it might be, where the three of us are always available to kind of answer anything. Even if you haven't kind of been online for like 15, 20 years and you're not sure whether you've got a membership, you still do, because when you become a member, it's for life. So just give us a call and we can kind of update things and get the ball rolling again and making sure you're registering your songs and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and it's completely free.
Totally free.
Yeah, so like you're not going to lose. This is going to be totally a massive benefit to you, because if your songs are being played anywhere, you may not even know it. They could just be out there.
And that's right.
Maybe, you know, so it's worth joining up.
Yeah, those businesses are paying for a license. You might as well get in there and get on board.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Gabe.
No worries. Thanks really so much for having me.
Another friendly face to make your life a little richer. People in Your Neighbourhood on 95 BFM.